It is that day. It's H Day. As we speak, the president is meeting with Vladimir Putin. They're wrapping up a meeting, and we'll get to that live presser. Good morning, everybody. Brian Suits, and I'm physically not in Los Angeles. I'm not going to lie to you, but producer Darren Casey is, pardon me, I should say I'm physically in Los Angeles, but producer Darren Casey is physically there in Seattle. This is correct, is it not, Darren?
Yes.
Did I just out you? You're actually somewhere else now. I know you're there on East Lake.
No,
so.
I'm here.
Welcome, everybody. It is the Jason Rand Show. My name is Brian Suits. Real quickly, I began in talk radio right in the very building that Darren Casey is in when this other station was on AM. And so it's great to be back here in Seattle. Seattle's currently in the middle of a conservative crisis because you're an endangered species. So it's great to come back on. In Trumplandia, meanwhile, real quickly, if you shut down on Friday and you missed it, Assistant Attorney General Rod Rosenstein naming 12 serving Russian military officers in the Russian main intelligence directorate known as the GRU. The GRU are the guys who do the primary spying for Russia, not the KGB. No matter what you saw on the Americans or 007 movies, the GRU are the guys who do the spying. If you recall, the Russian couple that was rolled up in Seattle a couple years ago as part of that big Russian spy ring, they were being controlled by the GRU. The GRU are the guys. And the indictment said that they interfered with the 2016 election, and we'll get to that a little later on. But and as we were saying before the show, any other time, that would be the story of the weekend, but it was not the story of the weekend as President Trump wrapped up the NATO meetings, as well as the one-on-one meeting with British Prime Minister Theresa May, and we don't even have time for all that to get into that. Maybe later on, but right now the controversial one-on-one meeting over the weekend, quite a few senators and congresspersons came out. And we're urging Trump to cancel the meeting in the wake of those indictments, which are pretty damning. They're because it's the FBI. It's very, very thorough, including work addresses in Moscow, where these guys worked and did their various hacks and hacking and et cetera. The president, obviously, being that he's meeting with Putin right now, did not heed any of those hashtags. Those very, very, very powerful hashtags, but he is meeting with Putin anyway. And then a very rare event. They're doing a press conference at 6:50 Pacific time. That's the tentative schedule. And this comes in the wake of the president calling the American media the enemy of the people. He's never used those terms before. And you know, we'll talk about it later, but I'll tell you, it's probably something he shouldn't be doing overseas, certainly not before meeting with Vladimir Putin, who very actually kills journalists, who does, in fact, treat the media in his country as not just the enemy of the people, but an enemy in dire need of a terminal solution for what they're doing. About 2 hours ago, when we were all asleep, the president was actually at an initial meeting for the press in Helsinki with Putin present. And here's a little bit of that audio. You're gonna have to bear with me because it's very echoey, very, very reverby, as we say in radio, because they're in this gigantic Finland wooden hall or something. But the president did not talk about Putin killing people in Britain, or didn't talk about invading Crimea. He spoke about the current state of relations between Russia and the United States. Here's a little bit of that.
Our mutual friend, President Xi. I think we have great opportunities together.
And I know I should set the scene. Putin is sitting to his left, to his immediate left, and Trump is sitting forward in the seat, and he's gesturing and looking over at Putin, and Putin is leaning back with his legs spread, and, you know, the Putin stance.
As two countries that, frankly, we have not been getting along very well for the last number of years. I've been here not too long, but it's getting close to 2 years, but I think we will end up having an extraordinary relationship, I hope so. I've been saying, and I'm sure you've heard over the years, and as I...
And those are cameras. I mean, if you can imagine that, those are that's just a constellation of flashes and almost drowning Trump out.
...that getting along with Russia is a good thing, not a bad thing. And I really think the world wants to... to see us get along. We are the two great nuclear powers. We have 90% of the nuclear, and that's not a good thing. It's a bad thing, and I think we hopefully can.
So there you go. There's a little bit of that. We'll revisit that here in a little bit. We have John Decker from Fox News joining us from Washington, D.C. John, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm well, Brian. How are you doing today?
We're doing good. I sure wish they had chosen a less reverby hall for that initial meeting, but
you know,
someone's going to transcribe it. So all right. So far, so good. They're in this meeting, I guess, now. So get us up to date. Is it still the one-on-one, the hometown date?
Yeah, still
date?
The one-on-one. That it was supposed to be 90 minutes long. The president just meeting, as you mentioned, one-on-one with his counterpart, Vladimir Putin. And then afterwards, the president will have what's called an expanded bilateral, which will involve the president and top aides to the president on both sides. So from the U.S. side, the president will have his White House Chief of Staff, John Kelly, his National Security Advisor, John Bolton, his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, the U.S. Ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman. They will each be there for the expanded bilateral. And then a little bit later this morning, we will have that joint press conference involving both President Trump and President Putin.
And then I heard that Putin decided that he's talking first because they're considering Russia, the home country. This is causing a lot of consternation in Finland because they have a muscle memory about the last time in 1939 and 40 that Russia considered Finland a home country. But regardless, I guess apparently Putin is going first. Tell the audience when they say one-on-one meeting, there are actually two translators in there.
Well, that's right, because neither President Trump speaks Russian and President Putin does not speak English.
No, he doesn't want to.
That's the reason why you have there's that as well. So that's the reason why you have the translators as well. But that's it. No aides in the room. And the only people that would be able to give a readout of what happened are the principals, President Trump and President Putin.
And as a caution to our listeners, possibly who reside in Alaska, is there any chance that Trump might give Alaska away for a bag of magic beans? Is that completely off the table?
I think that is not on the table at all. The president says that he'll bring up Russia meddling in our presidential and general elections as well back in 2016, this meeting, of course, comes just a few days after the Department of Justice announced new indictments against 12 Russians for their efforts to impact the 2016 elections.
All right. So I will probably take this press conference live when it happens. I'd imagine you guys will, too. Nationally, but by the way, any heads up on how long it's they're supposed to each make a statement, and then apparently Vladimir Putin is really going to take questions from American media?
Yeah, I don't think he has anything to be concerned about. He's done sit down interviews with American media before. Of course, we saw that this past weekend doing a sit down interview, Mr. Putin, with Chris Wallace. From Fox News, you know, Megyn Kelly did a sit-down with President Putin as well to inaugurate her show on NBC. So, look, he's a smart guy. I don't think there's any question that's going to trip him up. I don't think he's concerned about questions that, you know, would be piercing from the American press corps. So I think we're likely to see two questions from both the American press corps and two questions from the Russian press corps as well.
Oh, those will be good. Those would be terrific. I can't wait for those.
Well, I doubt they will be penetrating. If anything, they'll be hard-hitting of the American president than the Russian president.
Mr. President Trump, how awesome is Vladimir Putin? On scale of 1 through 9,000, would you say he's an 8,999?
Yeah, so, that's about right.
All right, John Decker, thanks for joining us, and maybe we'll catch up to you later.
Have a great day.
You too. All right, it is the Jason Rand Show. Brian Suits filling in, but we come back a little more about Helsinki. And if you haven't heard, you have to hear about the drama that Elon Musk got himself into. That suspected conservative Elon Musk is in some deep musk. That and more coming up. It is the Jason Rand Show, AM 770 KTTH. AM 770 KTTH, you've got the Jason Ranch Show. Brian Suits filling in for Jason, and we'll continue monitoring what is going on in Helsinki. There's supposed to be a dual press conference with Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump here in about half an hour, and Putin will speak first because they're claiming that Russia's the home country for this summit, and they're even though they're in Finland. And so, just to refresh your memory, there's not really an issue on the table. When they said summit, I think that was sort of a muscle memory in the American media. But Ambassador John Huntsman, who you recall from he was briefly in the presidential race, I believe, early in 2015. A smart guy, former ambassador to China, guy speaks Chinese. He also has an amazing skill of producing complete haughty daughters. And so he's now the ambassador to Moscow, very smart guy. And he said over the weekend, he was sort of the advance man in Helsinki. And he said, you know, this is effectively just a meeting because there is not a red hot issue on the table. There probably will be agenda items that Putin wants to hit. And what he's been doing undoubtedly for the past 90 minutes is Putin has been trying to get out of Trump a tacit acknowledgement, and because this is ultimately his goal. Just say the words that Crimea is historically Russian and it's de facto Russian territory now. I mean, what the hell? We built a huge bridge to the Crimea. So you don't even have to go through Ukraine to get there. That peninsula was ours. It's 90% ethnic Russian, the whole thing. And so we'll see. This is a lot of people have this fear of Donald Trump because he demonstrably tends to there's a derisive term and it's seat cushion, meaning that he retains the impression of the last person who sits on him. So that's why a lot of the senior advisory staff, including John Bolton, we're not super happy that he was going to meet with Putin one-on-one because Putin knows that the second Trump says it, it's policy. Trump can't bounce out of the meeting and then have a quick heads up with John Kelly and Bolton and say, I forgot. Is he lying about Crimea? Is it really 90% ethnic Russian? And so Putin's aware of this. And so the entire end game for Putin is to maneuver Trump into saying something in the next half hour that, you know, instantly becomes policy. You can't go home and go, you know, on second thought, what I said after I met with him one-on-one, after everyone warned me that I shouldn't, is not policy. So not to correct John Decker, I mean, I know officially Vladimir Putin doesn't speak English. Of course, officially he doesn't. He doesn't like anyone knowing that he speaks English. He's very self-conscious about his English. The one language he does speak fluently is German, because as a KGB officer, as a major and lieutenant colonel, he lived in Leipzig, where his job at Leipzig University was to develop foreign university students into assets for the KGB, so that when they went back to Angola or Paraguay or Mexico and got into politics, that he would have a contact with them. He wasn't particularly good at it, which is why he retired as a lieutenant colonel. But regardless, that was his job, and one of the skill sets that Russians have that is generally not a problem for most Americans, because most of us are not bilingual. But for especially KGB guys and then Russian military intelligence GRU guys, they speak multiple languages, but you don't need to know it. I don't know one bilingual American that doesn't tell you that they're bilingual. It's almost like the CrossFit for the mouth. You know, you just, people who are bilingual just can't help but tell you how bilingual or trilingual they are,
or vegan,
and how awesome CrossFit is. So the deal is, real quickly, I said I would tell you about this Elon Musk thing. Elon Musk, wealthy guy, right? SpaceX, Tesla Motors, the whole thing, rumored to be a conservative. There are strong rumors that he's a conservative, and there's a lot of evidence that he's a conservative as well. Well, last weekend, when those boys in Thailand were still stuck in the cave, he had this escape submarine, and it was more like a capsule. It was a suppository shaped, or I should say bullet shaped. It was a bullet shaped. escape capsule, and it could hold one small person. So his plan was to rush this thing to Thailand and take the boys out, if needed, one at a time. What was going on at the time was that they already had a plan in place. They were moving in place with it. But he got the thing to Thailand. Thai authorities said, thanks, but no thanks. We already got this. And then, and this is out of his own pocket. Okay, this is not government subsidies paying for Tesla or anything like that. This is out of his own pocket. And then one of the rescuers, this British guy, had to disrespect Elon Musk. And this was a gent named Unsworth, who was one of the main rescuers. This is what he said about Elon Musk's rescue submarine.
And stick his submarine where it hurts. Just had absolutely no chance of working. He had no conception of what the cave passage was like. The submarine, I believe, was about 5'6" long, rigid, so it wouldn't have gone round.
Rigid, you get the point. So yesterday, Elon Musk took to Twitter and he called this guy a pedophile. That's what he said. He called this guy a kitty diddler, because why else would an adult male live in Thailand? And so the hilarity ensued from there. So that's part one. We'll get to part two a little bit later on in the show. But that, you're up to speed. Guy denounced his gracious charity. Musk lashes back at the guy, and also spent yesterday denying that he was a conservative, which is how you know he's a conservative. So we'll be back. It is Brian Suits. Welcome back, everyone. Great to talk to people in Seattle. Those of you in your car actually working, good for you. We'll be back in just a second. Brian Suits sitting in all week long on the Jason Ranch Show right here on AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back. It's the Jason Ranch Show on AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits filling in this week for Jason Ranch. He's on the vacation, and a little later on, over the weekend, King 5 had a story about stuffing homeless people into wee little tiny houses that are going to be planted like in Ballard and the U District and all this. We'll get to that a little later on. And right when you're sitting there saying, could Seattle get any more silly and enabling and continue to treat homelessness like it's a hurricane or something it's passing over, and not in many, many cases the result of personal choices by the people who are homeless. So right when you're thinking Seattle couldn't get any sillier, I'll just tell you this. I'll just tease it this way. There's a city a little bit to the south of Seattle on the West Coast with a new mayor. They're about to open up their first public open air shooting galleries like they have up in Vancouver. If you've been up to Vancouver, BC, any time in the last, I think it goes back 20 years now, but if you've been up to Vancouver in the past decade and you've been to the historic downtown area, which normally is where tourists should be flocking for the quaint old scenes, they have shooting galleries. They have heroin addicts going to publicly run places to go and shoot up, because their concern is more about the spread of disease than the spread of incivility or the crime related to people that are drug addicts, because drug addicts don't hold down jobs. They go and they steal your stuff and then they sell it to buy drugs. And that's what you get with shooting galleries. Anyway, there's a large city, and sadly, I'm afraid that there's a lot of Seattle city politicians that look to this city as somehow the future, but they're about to open up the first open air shooting galleries for heroin in America, thinking, well, that's a great idea. And they point to Vancouver as some shining success, which, by the way, if you talk to Vancouver authorities, oh yeah, it's a terrific, they've really cut down on the amount of communicable sexually transmitted diseases and herpes and hepatitis and the whole thing. But meanwhile, the small crime rate is just off the charts, and they don't tell you about that. So this large American city is going to start doing that. And then secondly, this large American city has a problem that Seattle doesn't have yet. And luckily, and we were close, but doesn't have yet. The problem the city has is tons of human feces on the sidewalks every single day. This is America in 2018. There's a city that has as a problem that human beings are defecating on the sidewalks. And you know why? Because it's tolerated. But this is the best part. This city is about to undergo a training program. They're going to spend money. There's a city that is going to spend money to teach hobos, which is what I call them. It's a quaint old-timey name. They're going to teach hobos how to drop a deuce. Okay, and then this is going to be placement, and it's going to be aftermath. It's going to be hygiene, the whole thing. They're going to teach people to not poo on the sidewalk. And so if you want to know, can it be any worse, it sure can. Seattle Times, yesterday, the Sunday Seattle Times ran a story. And we every once in a while, we see these. And this is, I guess you would put it in the category of excesses in Seattle school district. And when you have a union as powerful as the Seattle Education Association, then you have the closest thing to lifetime employment as you're going to get. I mean, short of making 737s, I'll just say that. So this is what it was. The headline is ex-teaching assistant charged with raping child at Seattle school kept his job despite trouble-plagued employment. So let me just drill down on that. Ex-teaching assistant, so that's hopeful, that's nice, charged with raping child at Seattle school kept his job despite his employment. He missed work 21 times, routinely showed up late or reeking of alcohol, disrupted class with loud outbursts, even one time playfully put a special needs student with impulse control issues into a headlock. Still, Seattle Public Schools kept Albert Verachesmith, a man who would later be accused of child rape, working as an instructional assistant at John Muir Elementary School 2016-17, pairing him with a special education student who needed extra help. In fact, only after he showed up smelling of booze yet again at the end of that school year did the district seek to fire him. Nice to find out that there are some lines that even they won't cross, by the way. But so anyway, even they sought to fire him. And keep in mind, the district is not the union. Wink, wink. But bottom line, they have some boxes they have to check. And apparently showed up reeking of booze multiple times is the box, not just the one. So anyway, after Mr. Verachesmith and his union, the Seattle Education Association, filed a grievance challenging his termination, the district agreed to a compromise, allowing him to keep working with kids as a substitute during the 2017-18 school year. That'd be the 2017-18, the school year that just ended a few weeks ago. So yeah, he was working then. So within 2 months, he had violated the so-called last chance settlement agreement by failing 2 urine tests. And I have no idea, was the test that he could do it in the bathroom, or was the test to see if he just did it in public or whatever? He repeatedly missed required alcohol treatment sessions. Still, the district held off on firing him because, of course, they're terrified of the union. And by the way, let me just, state for the record, I get it. This is what unions are for. They go to bat for everybody. That's why you're paying your dues and the whole thing. But it's one thing when you have, a police officer in a questionable shoot or something like that, or the department is going to railroad probably a him off the department because his mustache is too awesome or whatever. That's why you pay your union dues and the police guild and the whole thing. Here's the deal. And I understand due process and we all have the benefit of the doubt, the whole thing. But schools are a different category because it's where we send our kids. For that reason and that reason only. And you know what? I can live with a theater ticket booth attendant who reeks of booze because I'm going to interact with him or her for 10 seconds. And I don't pay their paycheck. They're private employees. I'm not going to get on a bus. I'm not going to get in a cab or even an Uber with a driver who smells like booze. But they're not taking public money. This is not just someone who is there because we pay them. This is someone who's not just being remunerated generously, regardless of what they say, pleading poverty and the whole thing. But the generous pensions, virtually no pay, Cadillac healthcare, the whole thing. just teach our kids and do it effectively. And you know what? Apparently, so now it's also just teach our kids in a fairly sober state. And, you know, if you do come to work reeking of booze and you don't have a good excuse, like I put on my brother's shirt after his wedding or whatever, you know, fine. Here's your one warning, but multiple warnings. So and this is before we get to the alleged rape. So Seattle Education Association, the union went to bat for this guy because they care more about their members than they actually do about educating kids. This is the ultimate conflict between teachers' unions and children, is because once you form a teachers' union, the priority of that union is to protect teachers, not to teach kids. Because it never was a union for teachers. It's not there to ensure the teachers are more effective in teaching our kids. It's there to assure and ensure that teachers are employed until the day they decide to retire and they have the full boat pension. The whole thing. Now, the good news is that ultimately this guy was fired on February 7th, but not after. And by the way, he is subbed at 7 different schools, 5 of them after the violations came to light. So he was bounced around. On January 29th, a 9-year-old told his parents about the 5 to 6 times that Mr. Verashtra Smith allegedly sexually assaulted him inside a bathroom at John Muir during the previous school year. They ultimately fired him just a few days later, February 7th. This would be 5 days after his arrest for investigation of child rape and molestation. His termination wasn't due to the alleged sex crimes, but for breaking the last chance pact. Of course it wasn't. That only happened 5 days before. So here's a guy who broke his last chance pact. He put his name to that and said, I promise not to show up at John Muir Elementary reeking of hooch anymore. And like in my world, if something called a last chance pact is in front of you, there's probably a tacit agreement on immediate termination. But that's in my world. I'm in the private sector. So what do I know? I don't know how they work in the public sector. Apparently, last chance means that when you violate your last chance, that will set in motion some administrative and bureaucratic rules that will ultimately result, hopefully, in your termination. Now, if you choose to rape one of your students between now and then, that's going to be between you and the King County prosecutor. So anyway, that's what this guy, rather, I should say, during the period he was on his last chance in 2017 is when the 9-year-old is alleging that Mr. Verashtra Smith sexually assaulted him 5 to 6 times. So that was already happening. So the termination was almost coincidental. He's 41. He's of Seattle. He has pleaded not guilty to both felony counts. He's been held in King County Jail in lieu of $500,000 bail. So he's in there right now. Trial has been set for later on here in July. The prosecutor will not talk to the media. Neither will his public defender. So we'll just see. And you know, here's to close it up with a nice little bow. Here's the difference between a union representing public sector employees. If there is another Verashtra Smith in the Seattle school district, if there's another guy, I'm just suggesting for those of you who are unfortunate enough to have your kids in Seattle schools, if there is another guy or gal, if there's another teacher in this status working under a last chance agreement, in my world, you have a right to know. In my world, if my kid is being exposed to a teaching assistant or a teacher who is there only because of a so-called last chance agreement, I want a heads up on that. I want to know the status of that teacher. Of course, the union is going to sue me for even suggesting that, because that's, of course, a private matter between them and their employer. But that's the difference between where you send your kids to school and who's exposed to your kids versus you buying a movie ticket. And so that's your latest. Letting you know, the only good news is that the abuse stopped because this guy was arrested. But do you have a right to know about others under a so-called last chance agreement? How many last? And here's the thing: I just want to know from Seattle schools. Don't give me names, but give me circumstances. Just give me a heads up. How many current employees with exposure to kids, with access to children, are there under one of your so-called last chance agreements? Just give me a raw number. I mean, I feel entitled to know that. I don't need to know home addresses or whatever. But if there's others reeking of booze, and this is why they have their jobs, And this is, and you think this is appropriate that our kids are exposed to people on their last chance agreement? I mean, this is like what the Terrell Owens of teaching, I suppose. Brian said, filling in. You've got the Jason Rand Show. We'll be back in just a minute. AM 770 KTTH. Hey, welcome back. Good morning. It's the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rand's next hour. We'll get to another Seattle Times story, actually written by Kaiser, by a PR firm, all about dementia and guns. Yet another sort of inroad. This one through the Trojan horse of mental health, of coming up with a way to implement seizing someone's privately held property. Being a firearm, but we'll get to that. Well, I teased for you a possible worst future than what you currently have in Seattle. In the city of San Francisco, there's been an ongoing problem because they tolerate absolutely every kind of excess, very much like Seattle, right? But as you recall, there are some lines that Seattle police, and even in Seattle, are not allowed, which is part of the reason that you can still walk around in Seattle at 4 a.m. Because believe it or not, in spite of who's the mayor and who's on the city council and the fact that Seattle police are resigning or transferring, believe it or not, you can still walk around Seattle at 4 a.m. because the cops are in charge. Well, not so in San Francisco. In San Francisco now, it's the 10th anniversary of the poop map. There's an actual live JavaScript map that everyone can upload. There's a live map. If you just Google San Francisco poop map, there is a map where people can upload, kind of like a real estate map, where they have seen human feces all over San Francisco. And it's in the really high-end areas because they tolerate it. They've been tolerating it since the mayor was Gavin Newsom. There's a new mayor there named London Breed. She's brand new. She's a San Franciscan. And she has item number one on her agenda, because this is, keep in mind, you think rents, you know, in Belltown, rents at South Lake Union, you think those are ridiculous. You see all those stories about, oh, see this new $19,000 a month apartment in Seattle. Well, it's like that in San Francisco. The difference is in Belltown, you walk out of your $8,000 a month apartment or condo in Belltown, you probably are not going to step in human feces. Not so much in San Francisco. And then, by the way, again, heads up, if the Putin-Trump press conference starts, we will take it. Putin's going to speak first, and I don't want to hear a translator, and I know what he's going to say before anyway. But so the NBC affiliate in San Francisco sat down with the mayor of San Francisco to ask her about her priorities and about human poo on the streets of San Francisco. I got to play that. I got to play their cool little sound because they spent a lot of money on this.
You're a native of San Francisco. Is this the worst you've seen it?
I will say that there's more feces on the sidewalks than I've ever seen.
How did she not know he wasn't talking about traffic, by the way? If you ask any mayor of Seattle for the past 40 years, if you said, you're from here, is it the worst you've ever seen? I think most mayors, up to and possibly including this one, would say, well, I know it can be frustrating, but we're working on it. And they'll be talking about traffic. Not her. She goes right to the feces.
Feces on the sidewalks than I've ever seen, you know, growing up here. That was something that wasn't the norm.
That you've ever seen.
Than I've ever seen, for sure. And that is a huge problem. And we're not just talking about from dogs. We're talking about from humans.
No. You know what? Nobody is complaining about dog poo. That's a simple fix. You know why? Because every cop on the face of the earth will ticket you for not picking up your dog poo. So no, that's not what they're talking about.
From dogs, we're talking about from humans.
No.
How can a city with some of the most expensive rent prices in the world also have neighborhoods that are being compared to actual slums because of the amount of human feces, trash, and needles everywhere?
There are a lot of people who have been pushed out of some of these places where you now have people paying these prices. About 70% of the people.
She makes it sound like the co-founder of Twitter is out there dropping trash on a sidewalk because he went from $12,000 a month to $14,000 and he reached the edge And instead of just buying a helicopter and flying in, because he can't live in his place, that he's the guy down there on the sidewalk in San Francisco doing his business or something. So you have to hear this again. This, because you hear a lot of wacky explanations about why people are homeless. Everything but the truth, which is overwhelmingly mental health, drug addiction, choices you made in life. The myth of the banker who's one paycheck away from pooping on a sidewalk is part of the lifeblood of the liberal coming and ringing their bell, asking you for their money. So in San Francisco, you see, these are the people that used to live in the expensive apartments. Now they can't afford them, so they're down there on the sidewalk pooing.
There are a lot of people who have been pushed out of some of these places where you now have people paying these prices. About 70% of the people who are estimated to be homeless now in San Francisco were actually housed in San Francisco before they became homeless.
Lie. Anyway, there you go. And you know what her program, her solution is, they're going to start a program with more tax dollars to teach hobos not to drop a deuce on the sidewalk, where to drop it, like in an alley or something like that. So that is really happening. And as a crystal ball about what's coming to, I'm glad I played this in the 6 a.m. hour so that the Seattle City Council didn't hear this. But anyway, that's, if you're wondering, could it be worse? Yes, it could. When this press conference kicks off, we will take it next hour. The Seattle Times continuing their campaign to take your guns away. This time, the Trojan horse is called dementia and old age. My name is Brian Suits at Dark Secret Place. If you want to follow me on the Twitter machine, at Dark Secret Place.